Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel.
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
All right, here we go, folks. Yet another episode of The Suspendables coming up with me, Jungle Jim Jerome, and Russ Cortinel. On today's show, the Churla fight that Russ tells us about is off the map funny. Okay, there's more pranks than people did. And then Rusty, a bunch of people were playing around in his golf course, in the bunker, kids, family, picnicking on the course. Wait till you hear how Russ got them off the golf course. Email shoutouts, a lot more, and a bonus interview with Kevin Lowe at the end of the show. That and much, much more coming up on today's show. Rusty, you're still down in L.A., isolating. How's it going? Are you? Have you had enough, Russ?
I said it before. I've got my family here, so we're enjoying it. My wine cellar is getting absolutely shit kicked every night. But other than that, and you know, the garbage man who comes to pick up the recycling bin, he looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger now because he's lifting our empties. And speaking of empties,
yeah, like I said, people walk by your house and go, Are the Cortinels glass blowers? Look at all the fucking bottles out there.
They all know what we're having for dinner by the wine we're drinking. That's for sure. No, they must have had fish last night. There's three whites that are empty.
There you go. Yeah,
but we're having fun. I mean, we're enjoying our time together. I've been having a good time with Weeds, as you've coined him, our agronomist at Sherwood Country Club, because the golf course has been closed. And we've allowed people to the course has allowed people to walk or run, and now people are totally taking advantage of it, and so we've got a pond out in the back, and all of a sudden there's fishermen all over the place.
Oh,
and
cool!
This is a bit mean, but so Weeds and I have this thing about the Canadian geese. When the Canadian geese land on his beautiful greens and fairways and shit all over the place,
right,
I let him know, and it's usually, you know, after five or whatever, because generally there's golfers out there, so they're keeping these birds off the fairways and greens. And so after five, I'll be out there. I might have a glass of wine in my hand, and I text him, and Weeds is at home in his pool after a hard day's work at Sherwood, and I said, geese on a 12 green, and poof, out come the sprinklers, away go the birds, and it works brilliantly. I'm not getting paid for it, and it's pissing me off, but this family decided it was a really good idea to come down and camp out on the 13 green with a blanket and a bottle of wine, and there's like 3 to 5 children, and they're running in and out of probably a 60-yard bunker that it takes these guys an hour every morning to rake.
Oh, they're playing like a beach?
No, they're playing like a beach, and they're in, they're out, they're all around it. And so finally, after a couple nights of this, I'm like, fuck this. Yeah. I go, Weeds, there's geese on 13 green. And I said to Paris, I go, Paris, you got to come out and watch this. So we're sitting back at our chairs having a glass of wine. And I didn't tell Paris what I did. And she started laughing so hard. And this family run away. You know, they're running off the green. The kids are giggling because they're in the bunker. They're not getting wet. The parents are soaked, like just completely drenched. And the funniest part about it, other than the kids laughing at their parents,
right,
was the guy goes into the middle of the green and points to the sky and gives the finger like there's some satellite or, like, you know, there's a camera that he's, like, pointing to.
Oh, that's the best.
So, anyways, we're getting a little bored, and we're starting to have a little bit of fun. So
that's funny.
Hopefully, one of the things I wanted to say at the beginning of the show was, you know, we care and we send out our regards to everybody that's suffering through this time, through, you know, anyone who, who knows somebody or has a loved one that's been sick or is suffering, and then all our frontline workers and stuff. But we have to, you know, Jim and I, we gotta bring it. I mean, we gotta have some fun here and lighten things up for an hour.
Yeah, we got Reg, eh? Came after us a little bit, eh? After the last show. Holy Christ. Hammered us.
Coach.
We were going good, right? It was like we had won 8 out of 9.
We felt like the 80 Oilers. We were on a roll, could miss curfew, show up 15 minutes before warm-up.
Yeah, then we lost 4 in a row, and we heard from the coach. Yeah, it's like... Anyway, love Reg. On the show today, one of the things, Rusty, is we got to talk about what we're doing on the show. So we're going to talk about the NHL is starting to float the idea again of when the league might start up. We're going to talk about that. And I have decided, Russ, the second hot topic here is we're going to talk to you about firsts, as in number one, the first things that happened to you, a lot around hockey, but... I thought that would be a lot of fun, and of course, that always leads us to different places. And thirdly, I did an interview with Kevin Lowe.
Nice.
Six-time Stanley Cup champ. You would have played with Kevin.
I played against him.
Yeah, played against him. He decided to make his home Edmonton, and as I say, is still with the team. And he's one of the most well-spoken guys ever, you know. You'll hear people say, well, he should run for politics, right? They always make fun of that. But this guy really could have, and he got approached, actually, about it many years ago and decided not to. But it's a great interview that we do with Kevin, and ask him about some of his firsts. And there's a few firsts in my life that I did that involved Kevin, Russ. Okay? Not fucking proud of them. Oh, not boy. Proud of them.
Only a divorce guy could tell this story.
Yeah, but they're in the interview. I reminded him of... what we did, and anyway, it's thanks for Kevin for doing that, and you're going to hear that in the show as well. So, you know what, Russ? Before we start with the first, as often happens when we finish the show, we stay talking to each other a little bit. And last week, after the show was over, the typical Russ, I was like, you couldn't have done that on the show. You told me a hilarious story about. A guy was going to fight another guy, and he was always getting scoops before he fought guys. He sort of did like reconnaissance work on these guys to find out where their weak spots were. And you told a hilarious story of a guy who thought he knew of a weakness of another fighter, and it completely backfired on him. And you got to tell that story.
Well, it was during expansion, so Ottawa is new to the league, and the Dallas Stars, we roll into Ottawa, and Darcy Wakaluk is our backup, and Shane Chirla is our tough guy. We had a few tough guys, but he was our toughest guy.
Right.
And so Chirla's, after warm-up, he goes right in front of the whole locker room, he goes, Wax, Vial, what is he, a lefty or a righty? And I'm going to get which arm it was wrong, but he said, oh, yeah, because they played together in the minors. And right. So Walk says, he's a righty. And so he goes, okay, great. And then towards the end of the second period, I think I've told this story before, but we'll tell it again. So before the second period is going to end, there's a few minutes left, I guess, and probably things weren't going as well as they should have, us being a veteran team playing against an expansion team. And anytime things weren't going well, you know, Charles would just freaking drop somebody and try to motivate the team to play harder. Like, he was unbelievable. So freaking tough. So they square off at center ice, and, you know, Chuck's like, he turns and he goes to grabs his right arm. And Vial is a frickin' lefty. And I'm telling you, it was so one-sided.
And dude told him he was a righty.
Right? And he told him he was a righty. So he grabs his right, so he can't hit him, right? So he thinks he's got his strong arm, and he got his weak arm. And Viel must have went, oh, my God, this is Christmas. And he teed off on Chuck's face. And he hit him so many times, it was awful. Like, it was so bad, because we love Charles, and right. He loved us, and we're like, oh, God, oh. And when your tough guy's getting beat
here?
Up, it's, oh, my God. So they get sent off the ice.
Right.
So we finish off the period, and we come off the ice. We come into the locker room in Ottawa, and there's Charles in the middle of the room, and he looks like Rocky Balboa with both eyes. He can't see. And he's waiting for us, and he goes, Walks, I thought you fucking said he was a righty. I thought he was a righty. He couldn't see out of his eyes.
That's so funny.
And all of us, like, seriously, we all went to our stalls, turned around to take our helmets and gloves off, and started laughing because it was just priceless. There's Walks, and Walks' answer was, well, I thought he was.
Yeah. We
oh my God, it
I love
was brutal.
That.
Frickin' brutal.
You know, we had, and by the way, okay, people stop with the emails that Kelly Chase was the best show we've ever done. Okay, Uncle.
Again, yeah.
This is the second week in a row.
Enough.
Okay.
Can we get him back on next week?
He's great. No, he came on our show and he was hilarious. So you can go back and listen to that show. But he was a fighter. And when you talk about these fights, and one of the very interesting things he said in that interview when talking about fighting is that he never, ever got in a fight that was just for show. He always had a reason. I read a very funny thing that Brendan Shanahan, the first time he looked for an autograph was with Rick Vive. And so he asked Rick Vive for an autograph, and Vive flicked him,
wow.
Told him to get lost. Okay, and he was pissed. Brendan Shanahan was pissed, and as fate would have it, they face off together when Vive was with Buffalo. Vive was not a fighter, I don't think. And
No, not at all. I played with him.
So they drop the puck, and next thing, Shanahan throws his gloves down and starts to beat the fucking tar out of Rick Vive. Okay. Hammering him, and as he's telling him, he goes, don't you ever not give me an autograph again.
Oh my God, that is hilarious.
Years later, you know, there must have been some crazy reasons guys fought guys, you know, in the NHL, but I was laughing my head off when I heard that.
I lined up against Brad May in Buffalo. Like, this is like starting, you know, start of the game, and he looks over at me and he goes, I used to watch you on Hockey Night in Canada in my pajamas on Saturday nights. How long have you been in the league? Oh, my gosh. Fuck. And then Ray Whitney, once he started talking to me in his rookie year in San Jose. He's like patting me on the shin pads.
Right.
And started talking to me. And I'm like, are you kidding me? The coach is going to kill me. What are you doing? You don't talk to the other team. Like, I was like, fuck, come on.
Yeah.
But that's funny about Brendan's such an emotional guy. Oh, my God. And when he fought, man, he fought to the, like, there's a guy that was, nothing was, it wasn't a performance. He was, when he fought, it was like he was fighting to the death.
Yeah.
So poor Rick Vive, who's not a fighter, was probably going, what are you doing? You didn't give me a fucking autograph, you asshole. What? Where?
That'll teach you. You know, you bring that up about Chad. He was like a really good all-around player, right, Russ?
Yeah.
He played. If you had to... You know, if you had to pick one skill from a guy, and I know people say, well, 50 goals a year or 70, but realistically, if you were going to draft a kid and you had to look at one feature, one characteristic, one really strong suit for a guy, defense, offense, toughness, you know, emotional, good with the guys in the room, all that shit. What would you go to? What would be your go-to, Russ?
I'll tell you the number one thing that I would watch for any, whether it was a defenseman or a forward, is what happens when they get the puck. And so many kids, doesn't matter what age, that, you know, they get the puck and they give it away, or they throw it away, or they what happens? Like, what do they create?
Right.
Defense. Like, you go D to D and you wait and make the pass, or you shoot it off the boards because you don't want to make a mistake. I would rather have a player that's trying to make a play and create something than somebody who's not afraid to make a mistake.
Right.
And then I would go from there. I would find that kid if I was a scout, and I'd be watching for the guys that make things happen, and then I would follow them from there. Now, what kind of player are they? Are they timid? Are they selfish? That's how I would recommend, if I was watching a talent, talking to a parent or a kid, I would say, what are you going to do when you get the puck? I talk to my son all the time about that.
So, Rusty, we're going to put you under the gun today.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this was my idea, okay?
So yeah, I know. Fuck, you haven't had a good idea in 40 years. Fuck. Hey, I got to ask you, are you winning any bets with all these replay games that we're watching?
Yeah, my son, as a matter of fact.
So you can frickin' win one in a row.
Funny you bring it up. My kid, I said, he came over to drop in. They're checking on me. You know, I'm isolated. I said, sit down, let's... if you're going to find something in common with your kids, Russ, for me, I got to teach them how to gamble.
We know you've done that once before in your life.
What's that?
When you were winning bets against your roommate.
Oh, Glennie Gretzky. Yeah.
Somehow the show was taped, or I can't remember.
I'll tell you how we did it. So.
Oh, no. Poor Glennie.
poor Glennie. Fuck, we used to just kill him. You know, the first story about Glenn was he got his real estate license, and I was involved in a real estate company. And of course, he came to work for us, and he was nervous, you know, about what to do. And they wrote a little piece in the paper, you know, the Great Ones Brothers selling real estate here in Edmonton. And I got a buddy of mine, Daryl, who's just a hilarious guy. He's like you with the practical jokes. Okay. He's the guy turning those sprinklers on, Russ. Okay. Just like you. And he says to, you know, to get a listing in real estate, as you know, you're a realtor, but to get your first listing is really huge. You know, someone signs a contract and they do a 90-day listing. And so everyone's fighting for that. You know, there's an expression in real estate, if you list, you last. And so back in those days, there was no cell phones. You know, you had messages, right? The secretary would fill out a message. And when you came into the office, you'd pick up all these pink message slips. And there was a message there that someone from the Southside funeral home had called Glenn. They want to list one of the funeral homes. And funeral homes, man, they got the biggest real estate. They're always right in the center of town. You know, they got the most expensive properties around.
A lot of dead tenants.
Yeah. Yeah, right. They always stay.
Holy fuck, where are you going with this story? I was just bringing up when you were gambling. Now we're talking about dead people.
Here's the story.
Oh, so, fucking speed it up.
So the thing is, phone this girl. Her name's Myra, okay?
Yeah.
And her last name is Maines.
Okay, so, Myra Maines. Hey, Myra!
Yeah. So he phones and he's like, hi, this is Glenn Gretzky. I'm looking for Myra Maines. And... fuck, the lady kept hanging up, and Glenn would phone back, and we're hiding around the corner, and then finally you hear this fourth time, you know. He goes, listen, do not hang up on me. I'm looking for Myra Maines.
Oh, my God.
And then there's this pause, and he's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And then he hangs and goes, you guys can't do that to me. You can't do that to me. Anyway, what else they did was... We live out west, and all the primetime shows at 8 are shown, you know, at 8 o'clock Eastern, right?
Right.
Which is a couple hours early for us.
Yep.
But I would get them, and then they're shown again out west, you know? So I was getting Jeopardy at 6 o'clock at night, getting all the answers to Jeopardy, and then it was re-shown at 8 or 9 Western.
Have a wager?
Have a wager.
Let's have a bet.
Yeah, the guy who wins here, you got to go get the smokes, okay? You got to run out and get the smokes. And so we started off, and I'm banging answers off like nothing, right? And he's like, oh, my God, you haven't got one wrong yet. I'm like, yeah, but double Jeopardy is really hard for me, you know, the next round. I can't. And fuck, I'm whipping off. I'm even down having a shit, okay, in the bathroom with the door closed.
We didn't need to know that.
And I hear the question, right? And I'm like, yeah, that's Paul Revere. Yeah, Paul. It's so... I win everything, right? I win everything,
that's so
every
good.
Question. And the next day he goes into the office. He's there before me and I can hear him. He's got my two buddies that I work with. He's going, listen, you guys, I'm serious. We got to get Jerome on Jesse.
he's a savant.
Poor guy. We used to just kill him.
But speaking of the Myra Maines, Howie Mandel, who I've talked about on the show a bunch of times, and when we were having coffee every morning after dropping our kids off, he, the odd time would come back. I don't know if you remember this, but for what show was it? Jay Leno show, he would do Hidden Camera.
Oh, I remember
so
that.
Remember Hidden Camera? So yeah. He had this little camera that he put between his glasses and he would go and pretend to be somebody he wasn't and just drive people crazy.
Right.
So my remains remind me of the story that he would do these ones that he would send to Jay Leno and Jay Leno's like, Howie, I can't put that on the air, but that is fucking brilliant. And so he would do them just to make Jay laugh, and then he'd go, no, here's the one that, you know, you can play.
Right.
That's so funny. He goes into a pet cemetery, and he says to the lady, I would like to bury my dog, Fufu. Oh, I'm so sorry, mister. And he'd make up a name. And she said, oh, my God, when did he or she pass? And he said, well, they haven't. The dog has not passed. I want to bury the dog. And she goes, well, it must be sick. He or she's going to die. And he's like, no. It shits all over the rug, and it shits here, and it pisses there, and it barks and bites, and I just can't have it anymore, and we got to get rid of Fufu. So I want to... I'm thinking, can I pick out a casket? And the lady's like, you can't kill a dog for that. And like, he goes, no, it's really, really bad, and don't worry about it. But can I see your caskets? And the lady is going, I'm going to call the police. And he keeps going, and she called the cops. And then the cops, I don't know if they came or didn't, you know, that part of the story I'm a little foggy on, but he would do this shit all the time.
Yeah.
Just totally screw with people, and it was freaking hilarious. He'd come in and, you know, he couldn't wait to tell us about the hidden camera story.
Yeah.
Anyways, my remains brought me to that story of Howie telling the dog story.
Further to that, then, because that was Howie's idea, then they started a show after that called Pranked, where they would prank people, but you would just be cringing watching what they would do. You know, it was Ashton Kutcher hosted this thing, and he's sitting in a trailer.
And then didn't they finally get him?
Well, they finally did, because he would do, like, he got Justin Timberlake, I think.
Yeah.
Or Bieber, one of them, where they show up at home, they have, like, I think three or four super nice cars. And they've got a crew there, and they're towing one of these cars. And this, you know, Timberlake shows up, and he's like, what's going on? And like, yeah, we just got where we're repossessing these cards because you haven't paid the tax on them.
Oh, God.
Anyway, watch them. Go to YouTube and watch Pranked if you really want to see some hard-ass bits.
Speaking of Pranked, we got to get my brother on the show to talk a little bit about what Chaser talked about. So we should plan on getting Jeff on the show to talk about his legendary pranks. And I'll sit back like I did it with Chaser and just drink White Claws and listen and laugh.
We will let you know. Jeff Corton will come up with the show. Also, we got an email address, thesuspendables@yahoo.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, The Suspendables. We got a great Facebook page that everyone's starting to load up and watch. But again, our email, we'd love to hear from you, thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And I want to read one to you, Russ, a little shout out, and we will endeavor to try and get to all your emails. This is from Stacy Thompson. Hey, Jim, I listen every week to the show, and actually lately I've been re-listening to the shows from the beginning. Wow. The show has really improved. So good for both of you. We live on a farm about 2 hours outside of Toronto, and I look forward to the daily laughs as I'm going about my chores through the morning. It's like someone from Green Acres here.
Yeah, no kidding.
I was never into hockey growing up. With just my sister and I, and our dad was not into sports at all. When my son and daughter started playing hockey around the age of 5, they're now 12 and 13, it got me hooked. They both play competitive levels, so I spend most of my time at arenas all across Ontario. I talk about the podcast all the time. Today I found myself watching the first game of the Stanley Cup playoffs from 1987. I know I've been listening too much when I start calling players Gretz, Meskenkoff, LOL. We also have taken to calling White Claws the Courtnell Coolers. Thanks a lot, Stacy.
Stacy, thank you.
Keep up the great work. Speaking of that, Russ, when we invite people to email, I keep getting people who get back to me and they want to hear it, whether they did the first time or not, is the whole story behind you, admittedly, running Mike Vernon. Give us that setup and how that all came about.
So it's game 6 in Montreal, and remembering that, well, you don't, people don't, but in that series we were up 2-1, and then we lose game 4 in Montreal, so it's 2-2. We go back to Calgary, we lose that game, we come back to Montreal, and they're definitely energized and we're not, and I've talked about the travel that we fucked up on. Mm-hmm. We flew after every game back to Calgary, back to Montreal, back and forth, and they slept in their beds in that city they played in that night, and we just got worn out. Anyways, game 6, we're down, I don't know what the score was, maybe 3-2 or something like that, or 3-1. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the score was. I should, because we just watched it. My son just played it. I turned to Pat Burns, and I said, next shift I go out there, I'm going to frickin' run over the goalie. And he just looked at me. And then when I went out there, I dumped it in the left-hand side. I used to do this a lot when I played. I would dump it because I'm right-handed shot. So I'd come flying down. I'd dump it to the left side and let the D-men turn the wrong way towards the puck. And I slap it hard enough I could get it in the far right corner.
Right.
This time I put it in soft enough that Vernon could get it. And I learned this from my brother. He said, just put it in soft enough. The D-man can't get it, but the goalie can. And I freaking came flying around the right side, the right wing. And I didn't hit him. After watching it now, I didn't hit him that hard. I should have elbowed him right in the head, but I didn't know. He was just so phenomenal in that series.
You'd had enough?
Well, I just had multiple breakaways I couldn't score. And so I was just thinking, what can I do? He was the best player they had in that series against us. And so for me, it was just like, I gotta take the goalie out. And that's not me as a, you know, but I did it, and I wish I had hit him harder. And it's funny because Mike and I are friends, and we talk about it. We've talked about it a couple times. And, you know, of course, he's all smiles because he's got a Stanley Cup ring, and I don't.
Right. If you did that today, Russ, what do you get, like 10 games or shit, if you did that today?
I don't know.
What happened then? Did you just get a penalty?
Yeah, I got a two-minute charging. Something. Yeah, 2 minutes.
Oh, that would probably be a big suspension today, I'm sure.
Yeah. But anyways, that was my – people remember – they remember Calgary winning the cup and me running Vernon.
they do. I'm telling you, I get emails all the time.
Oh, you know who listens to our show every time it comes out is Barrett Jackman. Barrett's a good friend in St. Louis and played for the Blues and great guy. We spent our summers together in at Gosser. And,
right.
And so anyways, he goes, I guess I'll listen to the Chaser show, even though I've heard those fucking stories 30 or 40 times.
There we go. That's what we need. A little down about Chaser. The guy's killing us.
Jax is a great guy.
That's what, you know, whenever you used to give me a zinger, I'd tell a joke, wherever, what gig we were at. And I'd hear you in the back of the room go like this. Heard it.
Yeah.
Heard it, right? And I'd just crumble, and I'd say, I listen, pal, I got a million jokes. And you go, well, why do you tell the same one all the time?
So Jim and I did the Gretzky Fantasy Camp. I did it 12 years. You did it all 14, correct?
Yeah.
Is it something
15.
Like that?
Yeah.
15. Or, okay, so I did 13. I missed the last 2 years because I was working in Maui.
Right.
And so there was a lot of repeat campers, but majority of the campers were new. And Jimmy would Rolodex the exact same frickin' jokes every year. And I'm like, oh my God.
I can't take
it. Not the 1, 2, 3, whatever. Yes, no.
Oh,
yes, no.
Okay.
The yes, no. I'm like, are you kidding? Okay, now I'm going to go down, play frickin' blackjack for an hour in Vegas, come back when this stupid joke is over. The first time it was funny. Second, it was okay. Third, fourth, eh. No, Jimmy, you do a great job. We love you at our events and bust your balls, but
I know
that's what I do.
You want to tell the Vernon story again for the ninth time?
You brought it up. I didn't.
You fell for it. No. It's a great story.
I wish you were playing goalie right now.
I would have fucking speared you. I would have hooked you right in the bag.
Ouch.
So we're going to talk about some first, and then we're going to get to this interview that we did with Kevin Lowe. So, Rusty, this is the deal here. We're going to talk about some of the first things in your life, not just hockey.
Okay. See if I can remember.
Okay. I'll go soft at the beginning.
Throw me some soft balls so I can at least hit them.
Okay. Your first car. Okay. This is light. This is light. Okay.
First car I bought was a Volvo. No, sorry, Audi. Bought an Audi.
When you were playing, or like?
When I got drafted, I bought a used Audi.
Okay, your first contract. What was it? How much?
I was first round pick, and I got 75, 85, 95, 105 a year with $100,000 signing bonus.
So the 100 grand is it up front?
No, I thought it was, and then I read my contract after I signed 50 grand up front, and then a year later I got another 50. But the thing I didn't know, didn't come from a fluent family, right? My dad worked hard, worked in the mill, I never heard about taxes.
Right.
I had paper routes and all the kind of stuff, and you got what you got what you were told you were going to get paid. So 50,000 bucks. I go there. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to buy this. I'm going to buy that.
Right.
I got 35,000. I'm like, where's the 15? Oh yeah, that went to taxes. I went, fuck. Okay. I'm not buying this and I'm not buying that.
Yeah. It's so funny because Kevin talks about the same thing in the interview. That's
I had
up.
No idea. Seriously. Like my parents never talked about taxes.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause Kevin talks about the same thing.
And I lost my dad early. Right. So I lost my dad when I was 13. It wasn't like he was, and when I was 18, it was me, my mom, and her new husband, but we didn't talk about money like that. So I had no clue.
Not only is that weird that you brought that up about the tax that Kevin did, but he lost his father at 13 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. His dad died very young and he had, and then of course him and his mom. What's the first? So you bought that car.
Hey, but you know what? I forgot. First car I bought.
Yeah.
Jeff and I split a 57 Chev truck.
Wow.
Yeah. That was the first car. I didn't own it 100%, but Jeff and I, we bought our neighbor's 57 Chevy off him, and then we split that. So that was actually my first car.
Did you pimp it out and shit and then sell it?
And that's the problem. He started pimping it out, and I go, okay, buy me out. And then I bought my next car.
You bought the Audi.
Yeah, I bought the Audi.
What's the first thing you bought your mother?
So, back then didn't have a ton of money. So what every year I sent her and my stepdad Cliff to Hawaii. So I would buy them a trip every year, and then we'd pay for their trips to Toronto and Vancouver. And then when my mom would come, I'd give her some money to go shopping, but it wasn't like we were, rolling in the dough.
Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Right.
But we took care of my mom as much as we could. It was my brother bought her a car and
cool.
Yeah. We did what we could.
She must've been knocked out.
She was awesome. My mom is great. And I say my mom has Alzheimer's, so she doesn't know who I am anymore. She's still alive, but she was the, if you talk to our teammates, they loved it. when we would come to Vancouver and my mom would roll in with the caramel brownies and cookies and she loved every, like, my teammates would come out after a game, my mom would run up and hug them like they were her kids. She's a great lady.
Do you remember the first time you got in shit with your mom? The punishment?
Yeah, well, my mom was tough. I got caught swearing when I was a little kid playing road hockey over at the school, and I came home, she grabbed me, come in the bathroom, and she pulled the back of my hair and my mouth. I opened my mouth and she stuck soap in and she said, my mouth, and said, "Bite it," and then pulled the soap out. And that was the first time that she really, I love my mom. We had a great relationship. That was the one thing I remember her really being aggressive with me. When my mom would say, "Hey," I would generally, you know, "Oh my God, I don't want to upset my mom."
Right. Right.
But one of the funnier young adult stories is my buddy and I might have invited two girls to Willow's Beach in Oak Bay in Victoria after being at the nightclub.
Right.
And we said we'd bring my friend Mike Shannon and I, we said we would meet them at Willow's Beach with beers, blankets, and pillows.
Yeah.
So we go to the fridge, we load up on beers and we get a blanket each. And we grab so many beers and we're shit-faced. And the sun's coming up and we're walking and dropping the cans of beers. We pick up a can of beer, put it in our arm, in the blanket, drop another one. We get to the fence and I turn around and it's my mom in her nightie.
Oh, no.
"Get the f—" And she didn't swear. She's, "Get the hell in the house right goddamn now."
Right.
Well, took the Lord's name in vain, but she's never used the F word. "Get the hell in that house right now before I kick your ass." And I looked at Mike and said, "She probably could kick our ass right now."
Right.
Yeah. So the next day we go down to the fridge and all the cans of beers are have dents in them, or, like, you know, because we dropped them off the cement.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyways, never saw the girls, but got in trouble from my mom.
My mother had the good one. I broke curfew. I come home at 5 in the morning, and she's in the basement. I snuck in the basement, and she got a garden hoe there. Says, "Oh, you like to get up early in the morning, do you?" And I'm like, "Mom, I'm hammered." Yeah. She hands me the garden hoe, goes, "Go out there, and you know, you got to start doing the garden, okay?" Fucking drunk, hammered, and doing this garden, only to walk by the laundry room and see my sister ironing because she got home 10 minutes before me. Yeah. My mom had the wicked punishments, man. Okay, Rusty, how about your first fight? Can you remember that?
Dale Hawerchuk, Maple Leaf Gardens.
Who won?
I did. You can Google it. It's a good one. Dale wasn't a, he was like me, wasn't a fighter. And so he thought, okay, I'm going to fight this guy, the rookie whatever. And
you filled him.
And I was so freaking afraid to lose. And he's tall, taller than me. And I started going at it, and anyways, it was fun, and it was fun for me. It wasn't, you know, two guys who don't fight, it's not nothing really crazy or anything, but I had the upper hand.
First goal, Rusty, you must have a great memory of it.
Boreas, a puck goes around the boards to Boreas Salming in Long Island, and he gives me that patent backhand slap pass that only Boreas Salming had. I've never seen a player do it like Boreas, and he could slap a backhand pass. It was phenomenal. I'm off the far post and Billy Smith is in net, and I one-timed it in and I scored.
You got the puck?
I do.
You still got it?
I still do.
Oh, that a boy. That's your first goal. Do you remember, Russ, what's the first autograph you got?
I wasn't a big autograph guy. Honestly, I just, you know, I wasn't. My brother Jeff loved hockey cards and all that stuff, and I liked the gum in the cards.
Me too.
I wasn't a big autograph, but I've got three great autographs.
There you go.
I'm looking at one right now. I helped put on a charity event for Microsoft, and so I have a signed puck from Bill Gates with Windows on it.
Wow.
You know, the Windows. So yeah, I got that. in the lockout, 94-95 lockout. We had a 3-on-3 tournament in Hamilton, and Gordie Howe played on or skated with us. And so Gordie used my stick, and afterwards he came up, he cut my stick down, retaped it just the way he liked it. Mm-hmm. And then he afterwards, I didn't ask him for it, and he signed it, and he said, you know, thank you to Russ, my friend, thanks for letting me use your stick, Gordie mm-hmm. Howe, something like that, and gave it to me. So I've got that. And then Gretz and I, when we played together in New York Rangers, I had two kids at the right. time, hadn't had Brooklyn yet, and he signed two sticks to give to the kids. So those are my cool autographs, but cool. I don't know when I got my first autograph. Sorry.
Do you remember the first one you gave that day when someone said, you know, can I have your autograph? And you'd be like, fuck it.
I was playing junior in Victoria Cougars, and I came out of the after a game, and some kid came up to my brother and I and said, can I get your autographs? That was the first, I don't know who the kid was or what, but that was right. the first time I ever signed an autograph. I was 17.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Clearly he wasn't in his right mind, whoever it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I know. He's high. Meanwhile, his buddies were breaking into our car, stealing right. our stereo.
Do you remember your first, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's pulling the distraction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember your first date? The first date you ever went on? She must have had booze, whoever it was.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and I'm not, I went on some uncomfortable dates. I remember going on a date with a girl from the Olympics. She was a figure skater after 84, and I just turned pro, I was 18 right. in Toronto, and we were talking, and she said, would you like to go for dinner? And
she asked you?
Yeah, she was older than me. And so she phoned, you know, she phoned up, I guess, because back is before cell phones, right? So she phoned me and said, do you want to go out for dinner? So I'm like, yeah, I, you know, put on a pair of jeans and whatever. I show up, she's in a fucking fur coat and a dress. And I'm like 18. I mean, I guess maybe she thought that hockey players wear suits after yeah. when they, you know, because we're always in suits when we're playing.
Sure.
But when we're not, back then I was in a pair, I had runners and jeans on right. and a whatever bomber jacket. Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. I walked up and she stunk, not stunk, she smelled a perfume and she had makeup. I'm like, oh my God. And she was probably, I'm going to guess she's 24, maybe. That was one of those uncomfortable first dates.
Oh yeah, I went. Listen, I was so uncomfortable. I got plowed when I was 16. That's when I lost it. Okay, at 16.
Lost what?
Plowed. Plowed.
Plowed. What is it? What does that mean?
I got laid. First time when I was 16.
There you go. Well, yeah. Good for you.
And then 9 years later was the second time.
I read a good one today. My buddy sent me one. He said, what did we do? I asked my parents what we, or no, I asked.
I'll tell you, I got it. Someone
you got
sent it to
Did yeah. I send it to you?
I'll read it to you. It's hilarious. What did our parents do before the internet to kill time? I asked my 26 brothers and sisters and nobody had a clue.
There you go.
Rusty, this is a good thing to end on. Some firsts, another show in the books. If you want to email us, thesuspendables@yahoo.com, thesuspendables@yahoo.com, and check out our Facebook page, The Suspendables. And coming up right now, I got a hold of Kevin Lowe, who you played against, as you said.
Yeah.
We asked him some of his firsts, and Kevin's always got lots to say about perhaps the Stanley Cup being vied for this year. What do you think, Russ, before we go? Do you think they will be able to? I like to defer to the health officials, but there's more and more talk here about if things sort of ebb for a little while here, that maybe in July?
What's happening to all of us around the world? It's all new to every one of us. And so right. if we have some crazy scenario where they're playing any sport, live and we can watch on TV. I think it's great. I think they should do whatever they can to play and right. and be safe. And if they can create an environment that that the fans are going to enjoy, I think the viewership will be huge. Look what's happening with The Last Dance with the Michael Jordan, the documentary. I mean, it's off the charts. So people are just, they're dying to watch anything that is entertaining and new that they haven't already seen, because we're all watching, we're repeating shows and stuff. So if the sports, if we can see some sports, and maybe it's different, maybe with no fans and whatever they need to do, and it's safe for the players, then go for it. Who cares? We're in this moment of life together. We're living this life together. They should do whatever the heck they can to entertain their audience and get these guys playing.
Michael Jordan apparently trumps everyone when it comes to money, what he's worth. You know, I've heard lots of stories, but he's a kajillionaire.
Yeah.
And as such, he's giving all the dough from that series to charity, from that Netflix series. What's it called again?
Last Dance.
Yeah, Last Dance. So,
man, can you believe that Pippen was so, he signed that long-term deal and was so underpaid?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of that Jordan thing. Has all that come up in it?
Yeah, so my friend here, Jonathan Severn, out at Sherwood Country Club, plays golf with Pippen once a week, and I'm not a big basketball guy. I love Steve Nash, but I'm not a big basketball fan, but I appreciate the sport, right? So he was playing golf with Pippen once a week out at Sherwood, and he kept inviting me on, hey, come on, I'm playing with Pips, and we're smoking cigars, we're playing golf, it's fun, you should come. And I'm like, nah. I see the first two episodes of The Last Dance, I text him and go, hey, when this shit's over and we can play golf, I'm freaking in. I want to hear more. I want to hear the juice. But if you got that much, and a guy, your teammate, is struggling, and he was with you shoulder to shoulder, and you won, and I know you were the greatest basketball player of all time, and
right,
don't you think you would give the guy, like, hey, here's,
throw him a bone,
like, I that's where I want to play golf with Pippen and just see, like, where their how the relationship is. I met Jordan last year at Gosser, and everybody loves him, and great stories and all that. But man, if you're worth $1 billion or 800 million or whatever the hell it is, like, frickin' slide your pal up a bone.
Yeah. So that leaves a bit of a shitty taste in your mouth. Speaking of that, the great one gave away every car he won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to likes and guys who are just what you talk about.
Dave Semenko, best story I heard about that. And the first time I ever heard about it was, I was talking to Sammy, and I said, yeah, Gretz won another car. And he goes, well, you know, I got a call the day after the All-Star game. And this guy goes, I'm from Ford or GM, whatever the car company is, and says, what color do you want? And he goes, what are you talking about? And typical hockey player, you think somebody's playing a joke on you, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, Mr. Gretzky is giving you the car he won last night. And all you got to do is tell us what color and your address. And I went, oh, my God, that's amazing. And he goes, yeah, he gave me two.
Isn't that something? Yeah, great, great story.
And Gretz is so amazing. And he's so generous. I've got a million stories about how generous he is. But the first time we did his fantasy camp, and we're flying back on his plane to LA, and I just saw how hard he worked, and it was draining for him in a good way. Like, he was enjoying it, but it was draining. We were partying, you know, you and I having a great time, and we're doing our thing, but we're, you know, it's not our camp, it's his.
Right.
And I go, Gretz, you deserve every penny you make from that thing. I saw you and watched you. And he goes, I'm not making any money. I go, what do you mean? Those guys are paying 10 grand each or whatever it was. Oh no, I donated it to kids in Canada that can't afford to buy hockey equipment. I'm like, oh my God, like you talk to Gretz and you start like tearing up. You got to look out the window like you're pretending to look at the view.
That not only that, but you go back to your own little world and go, fuck, I got to do something for someone. I'll tell you what, I had a brother, unfortunately, who was killed when he was 21, my younger brother, and on my mother's birthday of all times. And it was horrible. It was a motor vehicle accident. And I was living here when I got the terrible call and jumped on a plane. And by the time, you know, I'd phoned my boss, you know, it was the only guy and that I phoned. And, of course, it was horrible. And when I got to the house in Ottawa, I walked in the kitchen. Of course, it was just a terrible, terrible scene. And there wasn't, you know, there was some flowers there. There were a couple of people. And there were boxes all over the kitchen floor that had just arrived. And it was, so a lot of people send food, you know.
Yeah.
And when that happens, you get over there. You got to do the right thing. You got to bite the bullet and get over there and pay your condolences. And you might drop off some food or something. And he had sent boxes and boxes of food for, so you would never have to worry about it for the next 3 or 4 weeks or so. It was just incredible. And it's one story after another with him. So
meanwhile, I'm eating the fruit out of my sangria while you're telling that story.
Okay, Russ, you are unneeded right now. Go grab yourself, you know, I don't know, a 16th White Claw. And right now, we got a treat. An interview I did with Kevin Lowe.
It's an honor to be on your podcast.
Aren't you kind? It's a first, right? That's a first.
It's a first, yeah. I know you've clearly got a lot more friends than me to have on. So you've been operating for how many episodes now? So I'm not offended, but glad to be on.
No, I had you on the list there, 8th or 9th, you know, down that list. But you know, speaking of firsts, with you and I, we got some history, and I'll give you three of the first for me that involved you. Okay. You were the first guy that ever hit golf balls off the roof of my car. Okay. Back in our day.
At three in the morning.
We were at a fashion show when Mess had that clothing company, and then it was time to leave. And I said, I'll meet you at the car. You said, no problem. You got into my trunk. And you pulled out a 5-iron and stood on the roof of my car when we were hitting balls. That was the first. And the other first, Vish, was Vish is, of course, your nickname, was you were the first lawn that I ever drove my car on in the middle of the night. Do you remember that? We showed up. You ducked out early, right? You were always the first guy to duck out after having a lot of fun. You said, okay, this is it. I got to get home. And
Mess, trying to be the responsible one.
Totally. And Mess was there with me. He said, where's Kevin? I said, oh, he took off and went home. And there was a pause, and Mess said, I don't think so. Get in the car. And we piled down the white mud, and he drove right up in the front lawn of your car. And the other one, okay, the other first was, you had a great, fantastic event in Lachute, Quebec, a golf tournament. And I was there, and I can tell you exactly when, 1986. And one of your sponsors was Thundercraft. Was that the big boat company there? That you had?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And the guy took us on a cruise, and I was snapped, of course. I was in my cups, and I kept flashing everyone as we drove along the sort of the St. Lawrence. There were a bunch of bars, and you said, hey, knock it off. And I did it again, and my brother was there, and it was the first time that you guys grabbed me, pulled my gear down, and held me up. And showed everyone I was bare balls to the crowd. So there's a bunch of firsts. Okay, Vish, there you go. There's a bunch of firsts. First of all,
oh boy.
Yeah, I know. Oh boy. Yeah. Tell me, Kev, where are you during this troubled time? Let's catch up with what you've been doing.
Yeah, I, spent Edmonton's home, so spent as much time as I can there. I've had a summer place or a retirement home in British Columbia for about 30 years. And it's, spent as much time as I can there as well. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful place. But like everybody else, just hunkering down, trying to stay out of everybody's way and hoping this thing, turns around soon enough.
You've got some big news. Of course, your son Keegan, is, got married, and you're going to be a grandfather now. Is that it?
Yeah, that's a first.
Yeah, that's a first, yeah, for sure. Let's catch up with Keegan, his hockey world. What's happening?
Yeah, he played the last couple of years in Bakersfield in the American League, the Oilers' American League affiliate, and really enjoyed playing for the coaches down there. It was a great experience. They had a really good year the year before. They lost in the second round. This past year wasn't so good. But living in California, I like the Pacific Division of the American Hockey League, and it's a good league. He was captain for a couple of years, so he's now waiting to see his contract's up, whether he's going to continue on in the Oilers organization or look to try to sign on with another organization or perhaps go over to Europe. So he's been fortunate to be able to play pro hockey for as long as he has after, you know, 3 or 4 years in the Western Hockey League with the Oil Kings.
Right. And he's right. He's right in the guts of it right now. How is he, mid-20s, Kev, a little older?
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, I've been following him as much as I say that. And then I have to ask you where he is, what he's doing, but good for him. And of course, my Oilers, Kevin. Okay. They're my Oilers first. Okay. Before they're yours.
Yeah.
These are pretty exciting times for you guys. And then the shit hit the fan here with the virus, but I've got to ask you about your team and your thoughts and then what you think will happen with the league. Let's talk about the Oilers first, where you're coming in at.
Well, it's so nice to see them finally turn the corner, and actually good for the province. I mean, the Flames have done well also, and it's, you know, everybody's sort of hoping that you'd see a Flames Oiler playoff this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously taken a while, but they have some bona fide superstars. They got a lot of good support players. Guys were having career years, so it was exciting and much needed, you know, because it had been a long time. And I think obviously fans were getting impatient,
right,
and rightfully so. But as far as what's going to happen, I mean, I still, like everybody else, have some hope that there'll be a finish to this season, whatever that looks like, whether mm-hmm. it's, shorten the regular season and you know, have a playoff of some type, but it doesn't look like that would happen for a few months. I read through the news that of course the players would like the same thing, but it's going to take some months, and whether that's this summer or in the fall or whatever, I mean, I can't imagine being Gary Bettman and the NHL executive committee trying to make recommendations as to what's going to happen. It's really difficult to say. But
yeah.
In Canada, is looking good and looks like flattening the curve. And let's hope that we do see some sort of end of the 2019-2020 season. I mean, it's, players' careers are short, you know, and you only get the chance to play in the playoffs so often. And let's hope that all the teams that were in the position to make the playoffs get a chance to play for the Cup.
Right. I like you, probably. I love Gary Bettman, but I like to defer to the health people, Kev, about when things should start up again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all these people are freaking weighing in because they're probably getting frustrated. But before I get into the fun thing here about the first, the rivalry, I was right in the, when I arrived here, it was right, you know, in 85, and it was, it probably still is the biggest rivalry that people talk about. And there's been some big ones in sports. It just never generated itself, Kev, till this year. And then I was talking to a guy saying, well, I wonder why it never did, you know. And the end point was, and I want to know if you agree with this or not. And the guy said, well, you need to have a rivalry first and foremost. You need two really good teams. What do you think about that? Because the rivalry has generated this year again, right, or regenerated.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it was at its height when both teams, I mean, the Oilers and the Flames were in the finals for, I think it was 8 straight years from 83 to 90.
Right.
Or 7 or 8 years, whatever it was. So fortunately enough, we were there more often than them. But the point is, they're a damn good team as well. So when two great teams are want it so badly, and then you have a natural rivalry already interprovincially that had been in existence long before the NHL rivalry. I mean, it existed in politics and business, right, and sports that preceded Oilers Flames early 80s. Mm-hmm. It just was there to explode. And I mean, there over the course of the last 10, 15 years, it wasn't anything like it was in the 80s, but it's still, when you extinguish a forest fire, if it stays hot and windy, it can pop up again. And,
sure.
and it was always, you know, on the verge of something. But of course, now with both teams being better, and hopefully an opportunity to play in the playoffs, it was good. I mean, everybody who lives out west and watched the last few games of the regular season between the two teams, it clearly was some additional entertainment above and beyond a normal NHL regular season game.
Right. Okay, time to have a little fun, my friend. I almost forgot what I was doing, Kevin, what I was phoning you for.
It's not the first.
It's not the first.
Speaking of first.
Yeah. Who am I talking to? Yeah, speaking of not the first, yeah, forgetting what I'm doing. So as I was saying at the top of this, these are firsts that we're talking about. And do you remember your first contract? I'm sure you must. The day that you turned pro, you know, that you were, you know, you played junior hockey in Quebec, and take us to that day. What, you know, it must have been a huge day when you were signing a deal to make money to play hockey.
Yes and no. It was a little anticlimactic, to be honest. I was the Oilers' first draft pick in the very first year, but I was the last pick of the first round, which was still, you know, substantial enough. But
sure,
I wouldn't have called myself a bonus baby. But yeah, it was. It wasn't something that was, you know, very public. The assistant general manager met me at the hotel and handed me my contract, and I signed it, and then he stood up, shook my hand, and said goodbye.
what was that contract, Kev? What were you making back? That's a long time.
I was making $50,000 to as my first year salary, and then I had a $25,000 signing bonus. And for some reason, they gave me the signing bonus when I signed, but they gave it in two different checks.
Right.
So I open up the envelopes and I do the math and I go, hey, it was a $25,000 signing bonus. This doesn't add up to $25,000. And he looks at me kind of funny. He goes, well, there are taxes, of course.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm taxes. That's the first I've ever heard of it. So of course I'm thinking I'm going to spend $25,000. It was a quick lesson in, no, the government gets their cut, and you don't actually, when you sign for something, you don't actually get that much.
Right. Can you remember the first thing, because I loved your mother, and she passed away, was it last year, Kevin, or 2 years
yes.
ago? Yeah. Jessie, and she was wonderful, and I got to spend lots of time with her over the years. Do you remember the first thing you bought your mother when you turned pro?
Oh, I don't know, but I my mom was fantastic, and my dad passed away when I was 13, so I spent a lot of time with my mom. I was the youngest.
Right.
And, I like to think I was as generous as possible. I mean, she would, any child would, I guess most, you'd hope that they'd take care of their parents if they're in a position to do so.
Right.
But
I've thrown you under the bus.
I mean, I didn't buy her a car right away, but I eventually got her a car, and then eventually was fortunate to be able to get her a small house. And
cool.
that was many years after my
you
first,
paid your taxes
first contract. Yeah, after I paid my taxes. Yeah.
Do you remember your own first car when you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I bought a Thunderbird from Peter Pocklin's Ford dealership on 75th Street, which is now Wayne Gretzky Avenue.
Yeah.
And, I remember it well. I had that car for a lot of years. Took good care of it. I was very proud that I could buy it. And,
right.
And my dad was always a Ford guy, so of course I had to get a Ford.
Sure, there you go. Do you remember your first fight when you played?
Yeah, it was kind of my, it was in my very first game. It was, wasn't much of a fight.
Boy.
It was more of a, first. Lots of firsts. If you're speaking of firsts, I thought you would have researched that by now, Jim, but.
Well, okay, you lay them on me. By the way, did you win the fight? Who'd you fight? Do you remember?
It was a wrestling match, although we both got 5 minutes. And it was in Chicago. It was the Oilers' very first game. I think it was actually the very first. Lee Fogle and I sort of each got in a fight at the same time. And so that was the Oilers' first majors. And it came on the heels of, it was in the third period, we're losing 4-2.
Right.
Very first game, October 10th, 1979.
There you go. So you're giving me a lot of firsts. I guess if you had to pick some firsts yourself, the obvious obviously is the Stanley Cup. But when you think back in your career, when you talk about a lot of firsts, what comes to mind for you right away? Besides the stupid ones I've asked.
Well, probably the Oilers' first goal, because I scored the Oilers'
first
goal.
Yes, of course.
So
yeah.
That one comes to mind, and it was assisted by Wayne Gretzky and Brett Callaghan. So it was, a bit of a milestone there, Wayne's first ever point in the NHL. And he joked for years that he touched the puck as it was going in the net.
Sure.
And I was like, that's impossible. Because I thought he was in the corner and he passed the puck to me. And then I saw a highlight of it recently and I went, he was in front of the net. He could very well have touched it.
Oh, no. I know. It's funny you bring that up because we've been together a lot over the years, you know, with the gang you ran with. And I remember always when we're talking, you know, it's always the... You start to shoot the shit, and it gets around hockey, and Gretz would always elbow me and go, watch this, and he'd wink and go, you know, Kevin, I touched that puck.
And I always, I just, like you, we laughed because for some reason I always thought he was stationed on the half wall where he normally was.
Yeah.
But that was Brett Callaghan, and like I say, it was only in recent months that I saw a highlight of that goal again. And I was thinking to myself, oh my goodness, Wayne was in front of the net. Because I, you know, I just, when he would bring it up jokingly
right.
over the years, I thought, ha ha, that's impossible because you're over on the half wall.
Right. You know what? Well, the other thing too, both of us said to him, listen, Skipper, you got 70 plus records. Okay.
Yeah,
can you let
yeah.
this one go? Okay. Really?
Jeez,
can,
come on. Let
give
let
a guy a bone.
A little bit of fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, first cup for sure too. That moment of time when you finally realize that you're going to hoist it when Dave Lumley scored in the open net to put us up 5-2. Might be thinking it didn't. There was only a minute left in the game. We're up by 2 goals, but it took one more in the net for me to finally believe that we were going to hoist the Stanley Cup.
Yeah,
and that's an ingrained memory forever.
What do you remember your that first emotion? What you were going to do? Of course, you wouldn't think about it ahead of time, you know. What went through your mind? I mean, I'm talking. God, we're talking how many years ago now?
I knew we were going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what we were going to be doing, but I knew there was a lot of fun on the horizon.
Yeah, and I remember the big parade because I looked at all the bad suits you guys were wearing. Wasn't there a big one down Jasper?
We had a bunch of parades. Yeah, they're memorable. It's great to see the old, well, you see them now. I mean, 30 years later, but
try 40 almost. No.
Yeah, exactly. I love historical stuff, and so I got a lot of old Montreal Canadian photographs of their parades, and it's really hard for me to even fathom that we were able to achieve this, you know, similar thing to them. It's like, that you always had them on a pedestal, and to think that, wow, we were able to do that. It just almost doesn't seem real.
I got to ask you, Kev, and I've asked you this before, but I forget. And it's a curiosity for sure that the Oilers would retire your number. And I've often, you know, people have said, how come they haven't done that? And I said, well, Kevin has an answer for that. And I forget what it is, but It should be up there, but you had made the decision not to do that?
Well, I was manager, and I always thought it was there was a couple examples where teams and players had retired numbers when people were in the organization. I always thought that was a little bit awkward. So, yeah, I made up the rule that you had to be in the Hall of Fame to get your number retired. So, but it was you know, primarily because there was a few media in Edmonton, right. Nice guys that were making a bit of a case for it, and I appreciate it, but it was just it did contrary to some, I've read some stuff where it was because of things had gone sour with me as a manager in my hockey operations days. It had nothing to do with that. As long as I was in charge, it wasn't going to happen. I just thought it was too awkward. And if ever the day comes that I'm not working with the organization and someone chooses to do it, then, I'd be honored about it. But I just didn't feel, for me anyways, it was the right thing to happen while I was running the hockey operations.
Right. So when you get fired, we'll be able to put your number up in the rafters. You haven't been anyone until you get fired, Kev. You know that, right? You haven't been anyone until you get fired. This is great. Do you remember, Kevin, the first autograph you received, the first one you got as a kid?
Sure do, yeah. It was Gump Worsley.
Oh, the goalie.
Gump Worsley, Lauren Gump Worsley, yeah. My dad took me to the Forum and he mustn't have been playing that night. Obviously, he was in his street clothes, and my dad brought me over to him and got an autograph. I didn't keep it or anything. I don't know whatever happened to it. I wished I had. And then not long after that, managed to get Gordie Howe's autograph, which was, they were playing an exhibition game, and we had tickets close to the bench. Mm-hmm. In those days, you could literally go and touch the players, and my dad sent me down while the game was on. It was an exhibition game, and Gordie turned around, took his gloves off, and signed my program.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Of all the stuff, Kev, you have over the years, obviously you can't keep a Stanley Cup in your house. You can have replicas. Of all the stuff that you've probably collected, maybe, but that's why I'm asking, what you must have a really prized thing. Whether you collected gloves or sticks or jerseys or something that you keep. And I'm wondering about that.
Yeah, there's when the Oilers moved their offices recently, found a lot of cool stuff from expansion, the summer of 79, when the Oilers were awarded the franchise, there was just administrative paperwork. But to me, that's the beginning of the legacy, the beginning of the Oilers and what they are now. So I have some of that stuff. We were able to keep jerseys from every year. And I've got a bunch of stuff, but I would say the most special thing is getting your name on the cup. Because that never goes away.
Tell me this, Kevin, before we go through all these first, there's some people starting to weigh in now. If Pacioretty the other day, I read a little piece from him saying if the cup does start up again, if they do this thing in July or whenever, that he said it might be the toughest cup ever to win. And then they went on to say, and I'm not blowing smoke here, but they thought, under that circumstance, that the Oilers might have the best chance because they're so young. What do you think about all that? If the game does start up again to try and save the year?
Well, I'm 61. I think they're all pretty youthful, to be honest.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Whether you're 32 or 22, but
right.
No, that would be great. It's tough any year to win the cup. I don't know if this year is going to be any tougher. I'm not sure why anyone would say that. But it's flat out tough to win. And it's just nice to hear the Oilers' name being even discussed about that. because it's been such a long time. So it'll be, and I'm like you, Jimmy, let's hope the health officials see clear that in the coming months that some semblance of hockey can start up again, whether it's right. fans or no fans or whatever. But strange times, and but it's I think it's really given us all an opportunity to appreciate, you know, life in general, right. and you know, time with family, and just perhaps slowing down a bit.
Right. You never. I was saying, Kev. You know, a lot of people before this hit, you hear a lot of people going, you know, who work hard like yourself, and they'll often say, you know, I'd give anything, man, just to be able to do nothing and spend 3 weeks at home until they had to do it. Now people are going, I got to get out of the house. tell me this before you go, Kev. What are teams doing? Obviously, you think of the Oilers. Are these kids working out? Are they instructed by the coaches and the team to be trying to stay in shape? Or is there anything official that they're requiring kids to do? Or how's that working with the Oilers?
Yeah, well, they can't have anything organized. Of course, you know, the from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, there's mm-hmm. rules on you know, on how many people can get together and so forth. So, you know, if the players are training on their own, I'm not sure how many of them have access to ice, if it's even possible. Most of those facilities are closed, so they're trying to keep. You know, they train all year anyhow, so they're all going to be in great shape. I think if we do get back, you know, they probably need a couple weeks of on ice stuff to. They're going to be in great shape anyways. They just need right. to get their skating legs, and hopefully there'll be, there'll be no injuries. And that if it did happen, it'll I think everybody will be more than ready for it if it ever does. You know, when it does happen.
Right. You started in the late 70s playing hockey. I'm sure you look at the way those kids work out all day. You go, yeah, we used to do that. We were.
we were thinking about it.
Yeah, right.
I have a son that does it. Yeah, it's the game's changed, but it's they also have access to a lot of stuff we didn't have. And I admire how hard they train. And it's great to watch.
Yeah, no kidding. Kev, this was great. You got a little get together there tonight. You're keeping your everyone's 6 feet apart, okay?
Absolutely.
Feet apart. This was fantastic, Kev. I appreciate it very much. I'm glad you're safe, and thank you for being the first. This is our first sort of first of a guest coming on our show to talk about firsts. So it's all great stuff, Kevin. I appreciate it, and we'll get you on again if we can. You don't mind?
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Jimmy.
All right, brother. Take care, Kev. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Isn't he eloquent?
Great.
Huh? Isn't he something? Thanks a lot to Kevin Lowell. Anyway, another show in the books. That was great, folks. Thanks for listening and sharing it with all your friends, and hit our Facebook page. And we need you, and we love you. And
can't wait to hear from Reg and see what the rating is on the show.
Yeah, we'll have to.
Reg, were we okay?
Did we do okay?
So we have to bring Chaser back?
Yeah. Okay. We'll talk to you next week, Rusty.
Okay, bud. Stay safe.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortnell in L.A. A new episode every Tuesday morning on Wooshka, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.